Namanda, 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 Namanda.
We'll begin this morning by reading one of Shindan Shonin's Wasan hymns. This hymn expresses the benefits that we receive in recitation of the Nembutsu, or the words Namu Amida Butsu, that we hear throughout our service this morning. Please join me in Gassho. When we say Namu Amida Butsu, the countless Buddhas throughout the 10 quarters, surrounding us 100-fold or 1,000-fold, rejoice in and protect us. Namo Amida Butsu, Tono Hore Ba. Jippo Umryo No Shopu Ta Yakuji Samji Ine Ushite Yorokobi Mamori Tanmo Nari Namandavats, 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 Namandavats. Good morning, everyone. Minasan, ohayo gozaimasu. Wonderful to see you here this morning. We have beautiful fall weather today. Now for our first day of October. This is my fourth anniversary as minister of the San Mateo Buddhist Temple. I started, if you can believe it, on October 1st, 2013. So 4 years have already passed, and it's wonderful to be here. I look forward to many more years of rejoicing in the Nembutsu with all of you here at the San Mateo Buddhist Temple. So each month, we have a special theme for our services based on the special service we have for that month. Can anyone remember the special service we had last month? It was also the special service we had last week. Yeah, do you remember, Nicole?
Fall Ohigan.
Fall Ohigan. Thank you very much. How about this month? Does anyone know what our special service for the month of October is? Anybody know? I know this section knows, right here. Care to enlighten us? That's right, the Eshini Kakushini, Lady Yoshiko Otani, Lady Takeko Kujo, Buddhist Women's Memorial Service. So each year in October, we have a special service remembering the important Buddhist women of our tradition and showing our appreciation for all that they've done for our tradition. So there are lots of names I read. Who knows who Eshini is? Eshini. Eshini. Yeah, do you know? Finley? Shindan Shonin's wife is Eshini. How about Kakushini? Kakushini. Yeah, do you know, Nicole?
Shindan Shonin's daughter.
That's right. Shindan Shonin's youngest daughter. Okay. We'll go in chronological order. How about Lady Takeko Kujo? No? Okay, I'm going to talk about her later. So we'll, if you, those of you who have a question mark in your brain right now, I'll try to answer that question. And Lady Yoshiko Otani, Lady Yoshiko Otani, that's right. That is the, we have a picture of, that is Lady Osh, that is the mother of, we have the previous Gomonshu. So if you look at these pictures at the top, we have our previous Gomonshu, Koshin, Reverend Koshin Otani, former Gomonshu. His mother was Lady Yoshiko Otani. So these are important people in the Nembutsu tradition who we remember for their contributions. So today I'm going to talk to you about Lady Takeko Kujo. Lady Kujo, a very important person, not only in our Jodo Shinshu Buddhist tradition, but in Japanese history, a very important poet of the modern period. And also she's the founder of what? Anybody know? Buddhist Women's Association. She founded the BWA. So this Today at 11:30, we'll be having our BWA meeting. We'll be continuing in the traditions of Lady Takeko Kujo. And so I wanted to tell you a little bit about her life. She lived a very interesting life, and she lived at a very interesting time. Her father was the 21st Gomonshu of the Honganji. So our current Gomonshu, if you look at our pictures we have on the wall, our current Gomonshu is the 25th Gomonshu, the gentleman who's standing there in the beautiful purple robes with the red okesa. That's our current Gomonshu, Reverend Kojun Otani. And so he's the 25th Gomonshu. So Lady Kujo's father was the 21st Gomonshu. So he lived about 100 years ago. He was living in Japan, and he was very important to us because he was the first leader of the Honganji to send ministers here to the United States. So he was the leader of our international organization at the time when people from Japan were coming to live here in this country. And so they requested, please send ministers, and he did. He sent ministers, so we credit him with helping to start our organization. So this was a time when the world was changing. People were moving out of Japan, moving here to the United States, and people in Japan were also moving from the countryside into the cities. Into the cities. Why do you think people would move from the countryside into the city? What do you think, Finley? Okay. The internet had not yet been invented. Over 100 years ago. So you're right. People moved to the city to have better things, to have a better life. In the countryside, they didn't maybe have good jobs, and they saw the cities and they thought, if I move to the city, I can have a better life. I can earn more money. I can have things that are not available in the countryside. So people moved from the country and they got to the city, and you know what? It was very different from what they expected. And they sometimes were not able to live as comfortably as they actually did out in the country. Right? So in the country, maybe they had a nice big farmhouse. Have any of you been to visit friends or relatives who live out in the country? Yeah? Yeah. And sometimes they have much bigger houses and much bigger yards than we do here. Your great-grandma Gladys, right? She lives on a giant farm with maybe like 100 cows, right? Yeah, because anybody here in San Mateo have room for 100 cows in their backyard? Maybe not, right? Right? So people, they moved to the city and they had to live in very, very small places, very cramped buildings, and they had been built very quickly. So they were not always very well built. And so there were many, many poor people who had moved from the countryside and were living in Tokyo and were trying to start lives and trying to make more money, but they were living in very unsanitary conditions. They maybe didn't have running water or toilets or all of the conveniences that we enjoy in our nice modern homes. But some people lived very comfortably in the city, and one of those people was Lady Takeko Kujo, because her family, her father was the head of the Honganji, and Honganji was a very large organization. And where do Buddhist priests live in Japan? Does anybody know where the Buddhist priests live in Japan? Yeah, do you know, Dilma? And they live in temples, that's right. And so she lived in a temple called the Tsukiji Honganji. Has anybody here been to Tsukiji Fish Market before? Has anyone been to the Tsukiji Honganji? I noticed some of you went to the fish market and not the Honganji. It's right next to it. Next time you go to the fish market, just walk a block and go to the temple. It's a beautiful temple. And if you go there, you'll see it's a very modern temple. It's a very modern temple because I'm going to tell you what happened to the old temple. In 1923, on September 1st, 1923, so around this time of year, there was a giant earthquake. 7.9 magnitude earthquake. That's a huge earthquake. And when there's a huge earthquake, what happens to buildings?
Oh.
Yeah, what happens, Cameron? Right, they break down with no one breaking it down. They collapse. They fall apart, right? And in Japan, Japan has a long history, like California, a long history of earthquakes. And in Japan, even back then, they knew how to build a building that was strong and could withstand earthquakes because it was built with joints. Do you see this nice construction here? This is modeled on a traditional Japanese way of building a building. So rather than using nails and glue and things like that, they jointed the wood together. It fit together like Lincoln Logs. Does anyone play with Lincoln Logs anymore? No, have I just seriously dated myself here? Lincoln Logs were old toys that were, they were made of wood, and you could kind of hook them together and build a building without using any nails or screws or anything. And so when you build a building like that, if there's an earthquake, it can shift and shake. I was in Japan last year around this time, and there was a giant earthquake in part of Japan. It was far away, but I was in Kyoto, and I was at the Honganji, and I heard all of a sudden people's cell phones started issuing an alert, and someone said, oh, there was an earthquake somewhere. And then 3 seconds later, the whole building started creaking and swaying, and they had lanterns like this, except they were three times as large. It was right above me, and it started swaying back and forth, back and forth. And there was this earthquake, and it was like, oh, but the building was fine because traditional Japanese temples were built to withstand earthquakes. So Lady Kujo, she had the opportunity to live in one of these very strong buildings. So even though there was an earthquake, she was just fine. However, when she, after the earthquake, she went outside to see if everything was okay, and people were pouring into the garden. Because as she looked around, the other buildings in the area, many of them had fallen down. And those, particularly those cheap buildings that had been built very fast and very cheap for all these new people from the countryside, all those buildings had collapsed. And so the people were gathering in her front yard and waiting to see what would happen. And so she realized, oh, all these people, they're not like me. They don't get to live in a nice house. They have to live in these houses that were very weak, and so now they're in trouble. So she welcomed them to come into her garden. When you welcome someone into your home, what is that called? It's called being a host, right? So she was their host, and they were her guests. So she welcomed them in to her house, and they waited there, and they waited there. But you know what time this earthquake happened? It happened right around lunchtime. And so when it's lunchtime, what do people do at lunchtime?
Eat.
They eat, but before they eat, what do?
They say their prayers.
They say their prayers. They say Namo Amida Butsu. But how do you get food? How do you get food? What do you have to do to have food? Yeah, Kate? You have to cook. And when you cook, what do you use? Especially if you use traditional Japanese food, you make a bowl of miso soup and cook some rice. What do you need? Fire, right? So everybody had lit fires in the kitchen when the earthquake happened, right? So everybody had the gas on, there was lots of fire, and so there was an earthquake, and all of these very inexpensive houses, what do you think they were made out of? Wood. Wood, paper, traditional Japanese walls made of, you know, they used lots of paper, like these shoji screens and things. We have, if you look, turn around, see, you can see those screens as a traditional Japanese windows are made of paper, right? So what happens to wood and paper when it comes next to fire?
It burns.
And so all of these fires started, and then, have you ever been to the beach? So Tokyo's right on the beach, right? It's right there on the harbor. And what happens as the sun starts to set at the beach? It gets windy. It gets very windy as the sun sets when you're by the water. So as the sun set, Tokyo Bay, all of a sudden it got very windy. So you have fire, You have wooden houses and you have wind.
And you have paper.
And paper, right? And so then what do you get, Dilma? Right? You would think you could pour it out, right? But there's so much fire. There were rivers and there was water, but there wasn't enough way to move that water. And so the whole city of Tokyo started to burn, right? And so Lady Kujo, all of a sudden, she realized, what are temples made out of? Wood, right? So even though the temple could withstand the earthquake, could it withstand the fire? No, so they had to run. And so she went from being the host to being one of those people who was running away looking for shelter. So she got together with everybody and they all left together. And fortunately, they were able to move very quickly. Even though there were fires burning all around, they were able to escape. She and the people who gathered at her temple were able to escape, but not everyone was able to escape that fire. Said that 140,000 people perished. 140,000 people died in that fire. And so after that, Lady Kujo, she wrote an essay describing how they felt when that fire was burning. She said, "Those with just a little life remaining were crowded on the sides by all fire. Those with high rank and low, learned and unlearned, old and young, people from all classes and abilities. But all these people who were moment by moment approaching their imminent fate had one wish, eternal life," right? "This is the final wish of everyone who has nothing more to rely upon. In this final desire, there is absolutely no distinction between great and small, high and low, old and young, male or female," right? So think about this story. At the beginning, Lady Kujo, she was living in this nice big temple, nice and safe, very comfortable. Other people didn't have as much money. They didn't have as nice of a house as she did. So we could say they were high and low. There were different groups. She had lots of education. Maybe these people from the countryside didn't. And so at the beginning, it was like they were from two different worlds. But then when this fire came, she realized that we're all people. We all have the same wish, right? We have the same wish to stay alive. We have the same wish to find something, find some teaching, something that will bring us comfort and clarity in our lives. And so after this fire, her way of living changed, and she dedicated herself to helping poor people, to helping people who didn't have advantages. She built a hospital, a famous hospital called the Ashoka Hospital in Tokyo, to help lots of people. Yes, Cameron?
Is it still there?
Yes, the Ashoka Hospital is still there. And some people here, has anyone here ever been to the Ashoka Hospital? Yep, I knew Sasaki Sensei, he's been there. And he's had some, you know, we've had medical treatment there. There's an Ashoka Clinic in Kyoto, I've been there. So this hospital is still there and it's still helping people, helping all people. And that's because Lady Kujo, she saw that when we're all surrounded by the difficulties of life, we're all the same. And we all receive the same compassion and the same support from the Buddha. And so she wrote many poems and she put together this book called Muyuge. She published it and it was a bestseller. And all the money that was made from this book was dedicated to supporting this hospital. So she was a very kind and a very generous person. And she was also inspired by the teachings of the Buddha. I read that poem from Shinran Shonin at the beginning of my talk. And she must have known this poem by heart because she wrote her own poem looking up at the night sky that was inspired by this poem of Shinran Shonin. So I'd like to conclude my talk by reading this poem. It's about the night sky. In the midst of all this darkness, there are little spots of light, right? What are those? The stars, right? And so in the midst of our world, people have all kinds of difficulties. We still have earthquakes. We still have natural disasters. But we have these moments of brightness, right?
Is that hospital 100 years old or more?
It's almost 100 years old. Okay? But there are these moments of brightness, these spots of brightness like this hospital, like people who live with kindness, people like Lady Kujo, like all of us who live in the Nembutsu. So in conclusion, I'm going to read this poem. I invite you to join me in Gassho. The beauty of the starlit sky. Who can understand this riddle? When countless eyes shine bright with tears of joy, my heart is at peace. There are Buddhas greater in number than the sands that line the Ganges River, who say, whether at noon or night, they will always protect me. My heart hears this and is at peace.
Namu Amida Butsu. 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 Namu Amida Butsu.